everybody. Welcome to Club and Country Today, Major League Soccer's official daily show, All World Cup. David Goss here. Welcome to everybody on the Extra Time feed who's listening. You know me pretty well from every single show. But this is our daily World Cup show, which we're now going to stick into the ETR feed so that you can get all of our U.S. Wales reaction. Alongside me, Matt Doyle, Andrew Wiebe, and Bobby Warshaw on a historic day in American soccer. It is the birthday of a single Bobby Warshaw. This is what the American game has been waiting for Bobby to turn, what, 27, 26 and be in your prime?
That's exactly right. Getting ready for the England game next week.
And you are what we were missing in this game. You are the center mid that we need. Bobby, happy birthday. We've had a lot of fun on this show over the last week. We gave you all of the previews for the World Cup last week. If you search MLS Today on Spotify or any of your podcast apps, that's how you find our podcast. We had a lot of fun on Sunday reacting to the first game, helping preview today. And we talked a lot about Wales and the United States men's national team. And some of it happened and some of it didn't in this game. I am exhausted. I am spent. I feel like I was out there cramping up for 90 plus minutes. Actually, what, 103 minutes over the course of this game.
So before we get into the seriousness, as a fan of the MLS Today podcast, I'll let you all gather your thoughts. I need a fun fact about a Bobby Warshaw birthday of years past. I demand this. I'm a huge fan of your fun facts about every nation in the lead up to this tournament. So as we figure out where we're going to go with this, whether we're disappointed, whether we're encouraged, Bobby, give me a fun fact about a birthday of yore.
It feels appropriate that on my birthday, Wiebe is making me banter at the beginning of a podcast, making me do a bit of a bit, which just feels right about this. There were a couple mentions to Stanford men's soccer, and I'll say that my favorite birthdays were when I was on campus training at the end of season, and I would spend the first 3 hours training with the team. And one of those seasons when Jordan was there before he ended up turning pro. So that was probably my favorite birthday. And let's move on as fast as possible from this opening show banter.
Wonderful.
I do appreciate Bobby somehow connecting himself to the Men's World Cup, though. That was pretty impressive.
That was my version of when everyone tweets out like, oh, good luck, congratulations, while they put their own picture into the tweet or the Instagram. It's like, all right, guys, we got it.
All right, so a big show. We're going to talk about all things in this game. We'll talk England-Iran a little bit as well. We'll help preview tomorrow. But the bulk of this, of course, is the U.S. versus Wales. A 1-1 draw in this one, the first U.S. World Cup game on the men's side in 8 years. Wales' first men's World Cup game in 64 years. So they won on that front. That was the only victory in this one for Wales. Bobby, let's start with you. What is your reaction? Where are you at right now? What just happened?
I feel good about the overall performance, right? If we're going to separate the performance from the result, as a U.S. men's national team fan, I feel very positive about what we saw. And I think overall, for the performance in the first 45 minutes, understanding the quality that Wales can bring, understanding where the projections were coming to the tournament on who was going to make it out of the group with England, I think you have to feel good about at least the first 45 minutes. And we're going to spend a lot of time talking about the second 45. But if you effectively break the sport into two different attacking components, and the first part is what you do as a team to create moments in the game that could then lead to goal scoring opportunities. And then you call the second part what you actually do with those opportunities. And I would say the first is based on the team performance and the second is based on individual performances. I thought the first component of that was fantastic. Everything the United States did with the ball, everything they did with their progression shape, with their seal shape, was as good as you will see from a non-top nine, a non-powerhouse favorite in this tournament. And yes, it was not the result. And yes, we can have a conversation about how you need to make sure you take points when you can in the World Cup. But understanding for what it might mean for the next game, I feel good about what we saw from this U.S. men's national team.
I thought I was going to have to be on the show to talk some sense and sanity into Bobby, but he just nailed it, guys. My work here is done.
It's taken Doyle's 9.5 years, but he has turned Bobby into Matt Doyle, and now he can retire off into the sunset in Cabo. So Doyle, follow up though a little bit for me, because I agree with a lot of what Bobby said, but at the same time, the U.S. dropped points in the first game. 86% of teams that win the first game go through.
The U.S. is now not in one of those groups.
And 54% of the teams that get a draw in their first game go through.
And 60% of the time, it works every time.
That's what happens when you bring math at Doyle.
I agree across the board with what Bobby said. I thought the first 35, until the goal, it was maybe the best the U.S. had played. The best the U.S. had played in a World Cup since that second half against Slovenia 12 years ago. The difference being we were the ones chasing the game in that second half, whereas in this one, we just came out and we stayed on the front foot and we really messed them up, and we were repeatedly getting into spots where we were creating danger. And Wales, to their credit, dealt with it really well. Right. If it's a 4-3-3 team against a 5-4-1 team, you know the 4-3-3 team is going to have a lot of the ball. You know they're going to create wide overloads, and you know it's going to be those center backs are going to have to step out to the corner of the boxes and cut down angles and scramble very well. And I think Wales did that all very well, but the U.S. were constantly on the front foot, constantly executing. It dropped off in the second half, but even in the second half, the U.S. with a deeper block or a deeper line of confrontation and trying to protect over the top because of the insertion of Kiefer Moore. Even in that situation, the U.S. repeatedly got into spots where they were either straight on the break with space in front of them and runners, or they were at the sides of the box. And the guys who are supposed to be the guys, Christian mm-hmm. Pulisic being the biggest one, just did not execute. And with two evenly matched teams, which is essentially what these are, even though their styles are so vastly different, you're not going to have one dominate the other for the full 90 minutes. So that didn't happen. You're going to have to win the game in moments. And the U.S. had those moments, but they didn't execute upon them, which is where the frustration comes from.
And I think the top line sentence, to even bring it back a layer, one higher, is that when in the past has the U.S. men's national team played a European country or played in a World Cup and been the protagonist in the game, that I would love to hear from people listening right now. If you were at a bar, and for the history of U.S. men's national team, if you were to turn on that bar against a top half nation or a World Cup game, and the people that weren't diehard soccer fans watched that game and said, oh, wow, I think this U.S. men's national team is the better team. I think they're the third team in control of the game. I'm not sure that's ever happened except that Slovenia game when the U.S. was already losing.
It's happened. So it happened twice.
Just starting there is a really important moment for me.
Yeah, but wasn't going to be that team against this? Wales doesn't want to be ball dominant. Like, in an evenly matched game, what team is not going to be the team that has a majority of possession?
But Weeby, come on, you saw it a ton in qualifying, the U.S. having a ton of possession but not looking remotely like they were in control of the game. That first 45 minutes, the U.S. had possession, they looked in control of the game, and the Welsh had absolutely nothing going the other way. Absolutely nothing.
But if you and maybe I'll just sit back and play like a different role on this show, because I am disappointed, and I'm disappointed in the result. Maybe not the performance in parts, but I am disappointed in the result. This is a moment for this U.S. team to execute. They had the opportunities to execute, and they didn't do it in a winnable game at the World Cup. And we've been waiting 8 years for this. And from a talent level and a week to week level of the club teams that they're at, I think it would be reasonable for people watching this game, whether they're diehard USMNT people or not, or just at the bar and like hitting a couple beers with their friends and being like, oh, what's this? US is playing in the World Cup, to expect a little bit more, to expect them to finish the job, or to expect them to threaten the goal at all after Timothy Weah's goal. They didn't. Like, if you're adding up like good chances in this match, you can talk about how Wales was stuck for 45 minutes. They had better chances. They were the more like effective team in the final moments of the game. And look, I completely agree with you guys with a lot of the
Wales had better chances.
Yeah, 100%.
Outside of Kiefer Moore's header on the free kick, did they have a single other chance?
You have the header that is saved.
Yeah.
You have the free kick header. The U.S. had two chances. It's Sargent and Weah, and that's it. What other opportunity was created in this
there
game?
There were tons of opportunities. Maybe that goes to Bobby's point. There were tons of opportunities. There were absolutely tons of opportunities.
To create opportunities.
And the guys got to the final third and they didn't execute.
I agree. And that's disappointing. Like, that's disappointing to me that there were those opportunities. And if there are tons, there's not even a trickle coming through of actual goal-scoring chance.
I'm perfectly okay with this challenge. I think that this is a very fair point, and I think it's one that a lot of people are going to make. What I'm doing here is I'm separating two different components, right? I'm looking forward and saying, how did the team play? Because overall, how the team played is more important to what's going to happen next. Or I think it's truthfully like a better representation of how good this team is and where we stand right now overall in the world hierarchy, which is always the implicit underlying conversation whenever we talk about this U.S. men's national team. And I would say that the team, especially for the first 45 minutes, was fantastic. Right. And I'm curious to other people.
I completely agree.
And I'm going to really measure my words here, because last time I went down this alley in any single way 4 years ago, it still gets brought up, even though I think I was right back then. And I think it's mostly still accurate now, at least. And it's the fact that the worst player on the field today was Christian Pulisic. And he had one special moment, right? One moment that perhaps nobody else on this team can do. And every other time he got on the ball, he struggled. And most of those moments we're talking about that the team created through their cohesive movements, through their really intelligent shape, through a really impressive use, which I'm not sure we'll see replicated that often at the World Cup, of starting positions and positional play and wide overloads, that Christian Pulisic, who in theory is the person that we should want in these moments, is often the one that did get the ball in space, that did have the opportunity to transition and just didn't. His ball striking let him down. His final pass choice selection let him down. And if he plays to either, I don't know, maybe where he's supposed to be able to play or what we expect of him to play, I think today is totally different. And this, maybe going back to the conundrum of how well the team played, might be the hardest conversation to have, might be the hardest decision that head coach Greg Berhalter has to make, is what do you do when your team plays really well and the person that let you down is supposed to be the person who lifts you up? So I think that so much of what the U.S. did today was really, really impressive. And Christian Pulisic did not play at the level that they need him to play at.
So I don't want to be the whataboutism guy. I agree with a lot of what you said. I will say two things. First, I thought the first half of this game was the best half Christian Pulisic has played starting a game for the U.S. that I can remember. So maybe there's stuff pre-Berhalter or pre-COVID that I'm not remembering right now that stands out. But since this group has come together, this is the best performance he's had from the start as a starter. And I thought the big part of that was it was the closest he's gotten to understanding the balance of how he can help the team and when he needs the ball and where he can do it. He didn't come in as deep. He did not kill the flow of the play as much in the first half. He drew fouls, I thought, when the U.S. needed it. And I actually felt that the U.S. came out, they had more of the ball, but it was nothing in the first 15, 20 minutes as the two teams settled in. And the moment the tempo turned up for the U.S. and they started creating actual chances, he was the one that initiated that, starting to take guys on around the left corner. The free kicks that he earned, the corner kicks, a little bit of the service was better at that point than it was earlier on. I thought all that was better. And then I would add, in the second half, no one else was better than him in those spots. Yunus Musah does not take chances when he gets into the final third. Timothy Weah and DeAndre Yedlin, especially down the right side, were not threatening when they got into spaces in the final third either. So I don't think it falls 100% on Christian, but I don't disagree with you in assessing his performance. I just don't know that I agree that it stands out as the only reason that the U.S. wasn't able to get on top. Because back to Weavy's point, if you play this, if we told everyone yesterday, you're going to be up 1-0 against Wales, I think a lot of people would say, well, then you're going to be up 2-0 against Wales, because they're going to have to open up and come play against you. And the U.S. failed to capitalize on that at all. And it doesn't just fall on Christian.
They had the moments. Like, I don't know what else you could say about the team. Like, how many times could
he have? But Aronson had the moments. Musah had the moments. Yedlin had the moments. Yeah. And none of them took advantage either.
So you're absolutely right. Like, and this is what I wrote in my column. I think it's a point I tried to make on the post game with Weeby and Charlie, is that, like, our guys in the final third, they weren't sharp. They're all a bunch of 21 to 24 year olds playing their first World Cup game against a team that defends very well. Everybody's talking about Wales like they're scrubs. This team made the round of 16 in the Euros. They made the semifinals. It's still the same group that made the semifinals back 5 years ago in the Euros as well. So, like, this team is battle tested. They make it tough on you. You have to be sharp in executing. And our guys weren't doing that. Pulisic is getting most of the blame from us anyway. I doubt it'll be like that outside of this group, because he's the guy wearing the number 10. He's the guy who is the Champions League winner. He's the guy who was most often in those spots to blow the game open, which is what a 2-0 lead would have been in this situation. And he couldn't do it, man. He couldn't do it.
And I do want to give something that you said yesterday a lot of credit, David. Because I had mentioned that I feel pretty confident that I would start Aaronson or Reyna instead of Pulisic and bring him on in the 60th minute. But you mentioned that what Pulisic can offer, and I thought this was spot on because I've been critical of what he did when he had time and space. I do think that his presence was very valuable to this team, that he clearly had an air to him that helped the team. He had a spark to him that lifted the team, and everything about this team's attitude, everything about this team's energy, especially when we saw other teams in previous days struggle with the moment, they were absolutely up to it. And I do think that he contributed to that, and that you were right to mention that's why he deserved a spot in the starting lineup for today's game.
Can I say this though? Oh, his set piece delivery was awful.
Tough. It's brutal.
Just awful. And to go back to what you're saying, Doyle, about a game like this, and I do think Wales is not getting enough credit. I would quibble the fact that it's the same team that went to the semis. I mean, you're talking about a bunch of, there's like a 22-year-old, a 21-year-old, two 25-year-olds on the back line. It's not the same team, but like set pieces is an area where the U.S. know they have to take advantage. Like, we have not shown an ability to break teams down in any sort of deep block for a long time. Like, that's just not been a strength. So when we had a raft of set pieces earlier on and we're not beating the first man on any of those to me were just like, man, those are just wasted opportunities. Not even just to get a guy on the end of it, but just to cause chaos, to have the ball get recycled back into the box. I mean, you're just handing out easy clearances to a team that's hoping for that. And that's their bread and butter, like put in a cross. We're set up to clear that effectively and reorganize. That was another disappointing point to me to go to Christian. I'm less harsh on him than I think you guys are. It just the lack of execution is disappointing. And I think the disappointing thing for me is it's just like a vibes check of being back in the World Cup and not wanting to have to feel like I need to medicate myself for 8 days. Like, and wanting to have a little bit of calm to be like, oh, England, like whatever happens, happens. We got 3 points. Wales is down there with Iran. Like, we'll handle Iran in the final game and all will be well. And now it's just like, oh my God, I'm gonna wake up at 3 a.m. multiple nights in a row and just be sweating.
I want to speak to that anxiety part because this came up in the group Slack, but I loved every minute of today's game. Yeah, I felt absolutely no negativity. I was like in pure bliss, even when Wales scored. Today's experience was just phenomenal. And as someone who has become, agnostic about a lot of sports as I get older, probably, one unit up today. I thought today was like incredible, and I'm very grateful to have experienced today. So I just want to throw that out there that I was happy and enjoyed today.
So I just want to go to the knockout rounds too. Like, I want that in the knockout rounds.
But so I have to say this for me. I've got stuck with this with the U.S. a couple times. I've asked for performances over results over the last year. Like, I want to see things from this team that don't 100% just mean the results. I've asked, I think going into the Mexico game as well as here, of go out and play to win. Don't play to be safe. Play on the front foot. Show who a lot of these players are. Give that opportunity. They did that in the first 45 minutes. So I can't reset the rubric and complain. And that was enjoyable, but it was enjoyable, Bobby, to your point, to me, that I cared and you were on every kick and every moment and every guy going down. And, I'm yelling at the Wales players who are yelling at the U.S. players for he thinks diving, but then he's down for 5 minutes and I'm complaining about it. I felt very invested and emotional in it, and that I hadn't felt in a while. So I thought that was really enjoyable in that way. And I think we got something, right? You said it, Bobby. If people tuned into this, the guy next to me who was talking about getting his suits at Suit Supply with his friend for 45 minutes hasn't watched a soccer game in 4 years. That, I think, is a performance that you're going to say that was impressive. The U.S. is good. The U.S. can play at a World Cup level where maybe that hasn't always been true in World Cups in the past.
Was he a 38 well regular? What do you, a 40 regular? What do you think?
Trust me, I was trying to tune it out as much as I possibly could.
How would you measure on your, you said you had your rubric in the first half of like performance over result was there. How would you measure on that rubric in the second half?
Pretty low. And I don't mind to Doyle's point, I don't mind that Wales has more of the ball and takes advantage. It is just the game plan was to make Wales do that and then hurt them. And the U.S. felt more scared of Wales' ability on the ball or their danger in the attack than they felt that they could hurt them. Right. And that's the balance. And that's to me what I wrote down in this game is the mentality and where this team's at and how young this team is. And that was my fear coming into this game. And I think a lot of that was assuaged in the first half of like, oh, these kids are playing their game at this level. They're not overawed by the moment, which me and Bobby talked about yesterday. That was the whole story for Qatar. They were unprepared for the moment and it was a different challenge. They couldn't play their game. They couldn't play the sport because other things were happening. The U.S. didn't fall into that. But at the same time, when they were behind the game, they couldn't figure out any way to get back into it. And they lost who they were and they lost themselves. And I think that balance is something that I worry about with this team because they are so young and who's sort of going to take control of the game and play through it. For example, with Canada, we've seen Steven Eustachio do that in huge moments. I don't think that player exists for the U.S. And so that to me is where the second half becomes really frustrating and really hurts. Bobby, you wrote down on our notes about halftime. So the first half's good. Talk to me a little bit about what happened at halftime and how you would replay it if you could going back.
One of the things that I believe very firmly, and this is across the board, not just today, but if you are coming into a game relatively even and you boss the first half, if you dominate those first 45 minutes and you do not put the game out of reach, you have to move the chess piece first. Because how many times have we seen this happen where it's a relatively even matchup going in, one team is awesome, and the second half is a total reversal? Because what happens, right? You go into locker room, and the dominant team, they all give each other high fives. They all say, great work. Keep it up. Keep going. Let's go back out there. Same thing, 45 minutes. The reason they had that advantage was one, energy, and two, usually some tactical nuance that they had the upper hand on. Right. Whereas in the other locker room, what does that team say? That team says, what went wrong? What are they doing? How do they fix it? And like the first, like across the board, every locker room in the world, when you get out playing the first half, the first thing you say is, let's go press. Let's put pressure on them. Let's make them feel us. Right. So once you have the energy switch, once you have the tactical advantage switch, which I know Matt wants to talk about what Wales did to change this game, which was impressive. For me, even if you're awesome in the first half, even if you dominate the game, you have to make a change. You have to make sure that they don't get the white pieces and move first, which is always an advantage. So I think that head coach Greg Berhalter did so many things right. I thought his lineup choices were right. I thought both the progression shape, the seal shape, all of it was incredibly impressive and largely spot on for those first 45 minutes. The fact that he did not make a change, either a sub or a tactical adjustment, for me was a mistake, and it gave Wales an opening to get back into it.
Doyle, it was the 66th minute where Berhalter finally made his first change. Mm-hmm. Brendan Aaronson coming on. It felt forced with Weston McKennie. We saw him sort of holding his groin in the first half, struggling at times. So whether it was tactical or not, he made that change. And then he made a triple change in the 74th minute. Haji Wright, Kellen Acosta, and DeAndre Yedlin all coming on. What do you make of sort of the way he reacted to what Wales brought?
I thought they were the right moves. I thought they came about 10 minutes too late. I'm generally a proponent of making earlier subs, especially when you have guys who are carrying knocks. And especially in this era of having five subs, like you know, yeah. You spend them first, change the game first, especially because to speak to the Welsh adjustment at halftime, they brought in Kiefer Moore, right? It wasn't anything masterful from the Welsh coach. They brought in a 6'6" dude and started launching long balls to him over our press, and that pushed our back line deeper because they were dealing with him and then dealing with knockdowns, stretched us out a little bit, but it also stretched them out. And that's why the U.S. had so many opportunities to get on the ball in space and drive the game forward against a backpedaling defense, which they didn't have in the second half. The other thing that Wales did was they brought the press to Zimmerman and Ream, because Zimmerman and Ream were really hurting them in the first half, especially with those long balls into the channel for Timmy Weah. Weah was always attacking that space in behind, and not just on the goal, but like a lot of it was like direct play from the back, because the Welsh front line, like Gareth Bale does not press. You know, he is not going to spend his energy closing down opposing center backs.
Although he tracked a couple times.
There's a difference between pressing and tracking. Difference between pressing when it's scoreless and tracking when you're down a goal, desperate. And so like that did end up changing the game. And I thought the changes that Berhalter made were the right ones in terms of getting players who could punish Wales when they were trying to build out of the back themselves. I mean, Brendan Aaronson had like a million deflections. Like he did the lead stuff, but he also did the lead stuff in like getting on the ball and not quite completing the most dangerous pass, like seeing it, but not quite executing it. And, you know, that's the difference between going up 2-0 and maybe cruising home to with a 2-1 win and 3 points and having that 1-1 that frustrated Andrew Weedy so much at the end of the day.
I mean, it's just like, you just want more, man. Like that, I think that's what being a fan at the World Cup is often about. Like more was on the table and given Kiefer? Like what I got or more. Yeah. Kiefer. Yeah. I'll take more.
Weebs, let me ask you this. We're both obviously MLS people. Walker Zimmerman.
I was going to say, we got to talk about this.
Like, but that is it where as bad as things were, they probably win 1-0 if he doesn't dive in, right?
Yeah, or as Doyle made the point on the postgame show with Charlie, or they just defend a throw-in. Like, okay. You know, there is nothing more frustrating than that. And you go back to MLS Cup. Look who's benefiting off this crappy defended throw-ins. Gareth Bale. How many times can one man do it in the course of, like, 3 weeks where he doesn't do much else in the game?
I don't know if they're listening, but all the 14 and 15 year olds I've ever coached basically the only thing I really harp on them is to pick up the ball as fast as possible and throw it in. I hope you now see why.
Yeah.
Right. Cause if you're going to get like one competitive advantage in this sport, it's pick up the ball and throw it as fast as you can. We saw it in MLS Cup and we saw it again today.
In what other instance in this game was Wales ever able to get in that sort of like channel end line cutback position? Not once.
Not once.
Like from the run of play, the U.S. didn't allow them. They never had that opportunity. And for them to get that in that moment, at that point in the game, like as it happened, as I saw the throwing come in, as I saw him get in the spot, I was like, okay, we're going to defend this, please. We're going to defend this. But what are we doing? And then we don't. And Gareth Bale's facing away from goal. And It just felt like, you know, look, it felt like there was some fatigue for the U.S. across the field, whether it was cramping for certain guys or whatever. Tim, I don't know what it was for Walker other than just a bad decision. Bobby, you maybe would be able to put words this better than I could. But like, and part of my mind's like a decision fatigue where throughout the game defensively, he wasn't having to make a ton of like split second decisions. Mm-hmm. Okay, do I challenge this ball? Do I not challenge for this ball? He wasn't having to sort of hone timing. I don't know if any of that matters when you just go through the back of somebody, but it was not ideal.
I do think this is important to say. I think the fact that you guys brought up the throw-in is important, and Walker does deserve blame for that, right? If you're a center back, if you're a senior leadership type center back as he is, you're expected to react quickly. But when it comes to the tackle, and I want to group this with the Weston McKennie and Serginho Dest yellow cards early on, which I thought people were unhappy about. My response to that is that, were you happy with the team's intensity? Were you happy with the team's energy? Those are both absolutely yes. You can, like there's almost no such thing as perfectly living on the line. And if you want players to come out emotionally prepared, then that's going to be the bad that you take every now and then. And I love those tackles that they had. And I think it's the same thing here with Walker. If you want a team to be aggressive, if you want a team to be brave, then you're always going to play on the front foot. You're always going to do the forecheck to win the ball. And you know what happened? He did it against one of the best players of the generation, one of the quickest, one of the strongest, one of the best anticipators in the last 20 years in Gareth Bale, and it didn't work out for him. But for me, that wasn't about the decision. That wasn't about the intelligence.
But isn't that scouting preparation and understanding the moment? Like, isn't the moment who you're going up against, right? Iranians should have stopped turning Bukayo Saka in on his left foot because that's the thing you know going in.
Yeah.
There has to be a thought process for Walker Zimmerman that – Gareth Bale is the one that I know, one, numbers are going to come help me, and that I need to stand up in that moment because that could happen.
If you were to do film with Walker and you were to said that, I think it's totally fair, and I think he would understand. My point here is that it is not worth the emotional energy. For me, he had the right attitude, he had the right mindset, and it didn't work by an inch, and he knows it, but it's not a point that is worth discussing or bringing up again because most of the play was the right decision.
Yeah, it was a mistake. Like, you know, I hear everything you're saying, but it's just it's a mistake in the 86th minute of any match, let alone a World Cup match, on a ball you're never going to win through the body of a player.
And I think
it's just a beyond easy call for a referee.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's fair to say in the first half, the big fear for the U.S. was Wales on the counter and Ream dealing with speed and Zimmerman's, you know, decision making. And they were perfect in all of those moments.
Yeah, 100%. Like,
they had all they did some really good things in this game. That was not one of them. And it is larger than just Walker. It was Anthony Robinson, Tim Ream, and I believe Kellen Acosta reacting to the throw in. But I don't remember who the third player was over there.
I think what I want to parse, and I do appreciate that directness, Andrew.
Well, is it a mistake with the throw-in, right? It's a widespread mistake, and unfortunately, sure, maybe unfairly, Walker is going to be the one that everybody points to.
Okay, I do want to say that. I mean, as someone who spent a lot of time in center back film, what I do want to say is there's two types of mistakes. There's one, a mistake where you still talk about it the next day, you try and correct it, and there's one where it's like mistakes happen. Most of this was good. So I think I'm okay with saying that it was a mistake, but not one that you bring up and try and correct the next day. So
yeah, I'm okay with that. How about this? Okay. How about this? Was it a mistake for the U.S. not to have Gio Reyna involved? Gio Reyna just told Jeff Carlisle right now after this game, quote, I'm 100% and I'm good to go.
He's not.
Right. I'm just saying. I'm asking the question, whereas Greg Berhalter was saying that he had some tightness.
Do you really think Weeby? All right, play. So I'm gonna pull back the curtain a little bit. We met Berhalter at the old studio for the first time in late 2018, I want to say, and he talked. This was back when we were all on extra time, and he talked to us. And like the first name he mentioned of a player that he wants to integrate into the squad as quickly as possible was Gio Reyna. This was when Gio Reyna was 16 years old. He literally, I remember this, he said, I wish he was 2 years older right now because I play him every minute. And every time Gio Reyna has been healthy, Gio Reyna has been a starter for the U.S. national team. Do we really think that he would not have played if he was not healthy? I will tell you this. I have heard from people who are close to the team, we should not be expecting much of Gio Reyna in this tournament. We should just not. That hamstring is not good. So I'm glad that he's going out there and saying, yeah, I'm 100%, because you want England thinking maybe, but I would not count on that.
Doyle ruining the team game plan here.
Yeah.
He's okay, Doyle. He's 100%.
Yes.
Oh, we just got a tweet from
Jude Bellingham. Certainly has no inside information as to say to that hamstring. Thank you, though. I knew you had that information. So I got a tweet from
Gareth Southgate saying thank you, Matt Doyle, because he's in here listening for the next game. Let's go back to the first half. Let's start here. Timothy Weah's goal. Like, Weeby, I think everyone here could name every U.S. men's World Cup goal in the last 35 years. This one was a good one, and it was special, and this was why, you know, I'm running around the bar screaming, because it developed, it happened, and I love Timothy Weah.
Yeah, I think this is it's special in a lot of ways. Like, I think Timothy Weah is one of those guys, as are so many of the players on this team, that represents like what it is to be American and in a really interesting, personal, can only apply to that guy sort of way. I thought it was awesome that his dad, who is one of the legends of this sport, and George Weah, is in the stands with his mother. I mean, the dude is the president of Liberia. He's in the box with U.S. Secretary of State. He never got to play in a World Cup. And he gets to watch his son do that, make that slashing run in behind, perfectly time the run to get on the end of Christian's ball. The finish is just, I mean, it's one of those goals with like the pace of the finish, the footwork, the way it just feels seamless. It felt, you know, it had swag. And Tim Weah has that swag, and Tim Weah has this sort of like multicultural background and experience in the world that so many of these players have, that so many people in the U.S. have. I was thrilled for Weah. I was jacked up to be a witness to that moment. I wish I was in a bar. I was not in a bar. I would have loved to be chest bumping people and, you know, throwing $8 lagers straight up in the air. Yeah, I'll remember that goal forever, as I do every World Cup goal I experience. I just wish that Timothy Weah would have got another opportunity like that. I wish somebody else on this team would have had the and the what moment a finish. To sort of make this.
Did you think the moment was done?
Discussion.
Did you think the moment was gone? He's in through on goal. Out comes a goalkeeper. I thought it was done.
You mean you thought he took an extra touch?
No, because Bruce
right?
Arena was ahead of us on the stream, and he told us it was a goal.
So No.
He was playing the Matt Doyle position, and he was like, "That's a goal," and I was like, "Oh, well." Now I get to watch.
I thought that he had waited too long and Hennessy was going to come down and swipe at it. I thought maybe he had to go around. And then at least from the camera angle, you couldn't actually see his right foot. So the defender's there. And then all of a sudden the ball pops out. And I thought the finish was just amazing, right? You think that the goalkeeper comes out. You think the angle is closed. And him come back with the back foot outside of the right, just a little slip over the hand. I thought the finish was fantastic.
That was wonderful.
The other part on the highlight that stood out to me is his recognition of when Pulisic turns up field. His first two steps, he's past Nico Williams before he recognizes the play. And so the rest of the play, the defender's trailing him. And so he uses his speed in that moment, less so than when he's put through, but to create the opening and to recognize the moment from Pulisic and know exactly what's coming next. And that was one of the few times in the attack where it felt somewhat pre-planned and that they kind of knew what their teammate was going to do and whatever it was. And then the quality and sort of the calm from him to take it. Also shout out to Josh Sargent, mm-hmm. right? Josh Sargent comes back, holds up the ball, holds off his defender, recognizes Pulisic coming off him. I don't think it's a layoff. I think it's a touch that Pulisic takes over from him, but he recognized it quick enough that he doesn't collide with Pulisic. And that allows him through. And Josh Sargent was probably one of the few question marks coming into this one. And that was a big moment to have and to help his team go up 1-0. You'd love for him to have scored or gotten chances, but he didn't. And he still was able to affect the game. And with Haji Wright coming off the bench, by the way, I don't know that we see Jesus Ferreira unless something's forced, which based off the yellow cards given in this game might be. It feels like everyone's going to be suspended in the World Cup for the third game of the group stage.
Does anybody have any strong feelings about the lineup selection?
I thought he got it right. I thought he got it absolutely correct. I thought he got the subs correct, other than, you know, waiting too long to make them. I know Charlie said on the post game he felt that Sargent wasn't being available enough when the ball was when the U.S. were creating overloads on one side or the other. I need to go back and watch that. I actually thought Sargent was doing a good job of pinning those Welsh defenders so that they weren't able to come out and sort of turn those wide moments into counterattacks going the other direction. That was the question mark. He got that right. Tim Ream was really, really good. He still had that one big mistake in him, but it didn't cost the U.S. at all. It was a wayward pass, I think, in the first 15 minutes or so. He just, like, hit it right up the gut, and it was a turnover that Tyler Adams just gobbled up. No, all the pieces were there. To bring it back to Wiebe's point, all the pieces were there for the U.S. to come out of this game with 3 points. And I don't know, like maybe I've lost my edge, but I see a young team in their first ever World Cup game. They played 45 brilliant minutes. They played 45 pretty, poor minutes, but still had opportunities. They didn't quite bring it home. I think it would have been kind of crazy to expect more than that.
Tactically, Bobby, what did you think though for Greg Berhalter in the first half, the decisions he made, the way the team came out besides just the formation or the lineup decisions?
So I thought that there were two main distinct traits to it. The first is the way they pressed, and they did the traditional 4-3-3 pressing setup, and they had the wingers push outside in. In this game, they had the two wingers step to the wide center backs and funnel it to the middle. The second decision on that was the fact that they had Josh Sargent not then step to the middle of the three center backs, but sit on the Welsh defensive midfielder. When I originally watched the game, I thought that was a mistake because it allowed the middle of the three Welsh center backs to have the ball, and it didn't put him under pressure and allowed him to pick out passes, which meant that the U.S. was taking a reactive posture, which was effectively to limit the chances against them, which is mostly what we saw Greg Berhalter to do with Columbus in the early stages with this U.S. men's national team, opposed to the proactive set that we have seen from the last year and a half. And I generally think of that dichotomy as the Man City versus the Liverpool. Man City just wants to get the ball back because they don't want to defend anymore. Liverpool wants to press to create chances. And I saw a reactive. But David, you did, as we were talking about the game, talk me out of that a little bit.
That may have been a mistake by me. No, I did genuinely actually, while watching, especially in the first half, feel the opposite of you. And maybe it's wrong. I think I acknowledged while watching it that it took away the US's attacking advantages because you weren't going to force turnovers really, and you weren't going to get chances in transition, but it completely neutered Wales' ability to play because Joe Roden cannot hit a ball from deep. No one made extra runs to be available for him in a midfield area because the front three for them just went high and wanted the ball played high. And so now you had Aaron Ramsey and Alex Morel or Morel, whatever, trying to find the ball amongst three U.S. midfielders and Josh Sargent, never could. And Roden turned it over 100% of the times. Everything was either a ball over the top to the goalkeeper or a ball that ended up out in a throw-in for the U.S.
And I did think the pressing scheme, Doyle, maybe you've seen this elsewhere. I'm not sure I've seen a pressing scheme from anyone who does the outside in and then against the three center back set has a wide midfielder or a center midfielder still go all the way out to the wing back. Yeah. It's almost universally like a wing back versus if you're going to pressure the wing back, you step your own high wing backs. I can't remember a time when you effectively have the center forward drop into a midfield role and then you rotate out a center midfielder. So I did appreciate the creativity there. And David, I'm still not really sure that's what the U.S. needed. I still think that this group needs to create chances defensively. I mean, but you are right. It contributed to their dominance.
How much of this applies to England, if any?
I mean, at the core of it, the question is, when you play against England, do you need to create chances with your defending? Or is England so good that you need to limit the risk, right? I one of the core takeaways from this World Cup that I have so far, largely from the Qatar game, largely from the Iran game, was that I think when you have this moment, you have the pressure, you have, I mean, who knows how many people watch today's game, more than you'll ever have watched U.S. men's national team game. I think it's better to just run and chase and press. I think that there's a risk to sitting and overthinking. So I would default for the emotional reasons of that moment to go and press and revert back to what we've seen before. But I could be talked out of that because I do think David has a point that today probably accomplished what it was supposed to.
Doyle?
Yeah, I don't know. To the original question, I don't know how much of this is applicable against England. Given what looked like fatigue from and maybe injury from Weston McKennie, given how much of the tank Tyler Adams had to empty in this game, given how exhausted Yunus Musa was by the time he was subbed out, it could end up being a very different looking U.S. lineup and certainly a different looking game plan, especially because England has a lot of the same problems that we do in terms of like they can get bogged down against a low block and they forget how to create chances. But also England has better players. They have guys who can just, you know, in the right moment, they can solve that all by themselves. And we kind of saw that today in their win over Iran. They weren't doing anything special for most of that game, except having a half a billion dollars worth of talent on the field, which is pretty special.
And Harry Maguire.
And Harry Maguire was awesome until he apparently got a concussion, which I think led directly to the first Iranian goal.
It is a different task. I think Greg Berhalter closed his comments with Jenny Taft saying that of it's a different game completely, right? The way England plays, the way the U.S. will have to react, it's a whole new test. Weeby, to your question, the one thing I do take away, though, is as many questions as there are out there about Greg Berhalter, to me, the biggest question coming into this tournament was, would these young players for the first time at a World Cup in their life be up for the moment? And they were. So I don't worry about that now, right? There's tactical questions. There's questions about decision-making and the attack. There's questions about setup. There's questions about fitness as well. And there's mentality questions on the way they finished out the game, but they were up for it. They were competitive. They were in the game. And that part now goes away for me, which was always a known, right, for 2010 and 2006. And like, you knew what you were going to get from that, at least baseline level from a U.S. team. And then you were hoping for a little bit more, or you believed, depending on who you were, in a little bit more. That was an unknown to me coming into this one. So that one's now a known. And I do look at the team that played today and say, if Timothy Weah comes in off the wing and makes a direct run at those England center backs, that's a good spot for the U.S. And if it's not Harry Maguire, it's Eric Dier and John Stones, that's a spot that I want U.S. players to be in. And I think there is a clear way that the U.S. can hurt England, especially with the way I expect England to play, pushing their fullbacks higher up the field and playing in the attacking half.
Despite me being disappointed in the result today, is it outlandish, is it naive for me to be hopeful, and maybe I'm speaking for other people, I don't know, I'm just kind of posing this to you guys, about what the rest of the group stage, at least, and let's just stay there, Greg Berhalter says this, two tournaments, can be for this team as they build, because this was just the first step. Like, I could see for this team, given the way Wales were going to play, how they were going to sit back, that it, given the pressure, the first aspect of it, it might be a difficult game in some ways emotionally. But I feel like England, the way they want to play, the way it's going to be on this huge stage, I think the game will be a lot more open, maybe lends itself better to sort of the personality of some of the players that we have. And then Iran is an opportunity at the end to sort of like make it all come together. Is there an aspect in your mind, you know, maybe Bobby or Doyle, of just like, even if the result was disappointing, that there is this space, this room for growth, and then it's up to this team to seize it. Like, it's up to them to execute in those moments, but they've kind of gotten over that first hump.
I feel good about moving forward, because again, if we think about at least the attacking play in the two components, what did your team create through the ideas and they work together? And then how did the players execute and finish that off once the chance was created? If you allow me to have the team playing well and the players struggling, I would take that 100% of the time. I would rather see what we saw and expect Brennan Aaronson, hopefully Gio Reyna, Timothy Weah, Christian Pulisic to finish off those chances. And looking to that Iran game, playing them third, knowing what the team would need for goal differential. Because remember, again, going back to at least 2006, every time a team has taken 9 points, if a team got 4 points in that group, they made it out, right? So if you do assume that you do beat Iran, if you do get to play them on the last day, knowing how you need to perform and they're already eliminated, I think the way the team played, the strengths of today, the weaknesses of today, set up well for the next two games.
Interesting. One of the things we've talked a lot about is set piece defending. That is a big worry for England, right? They're the most dangerous team off set pieces. And I think I saw some of those deficiencies for the U.S. A big one is that towering ball to the far post. And then obviously Kiefer Moore is a unique target, but Harry Maguire is a similar player. And I don't know if that was being competitive and not winning your 50-50s and staying locked in for the U.S. or if it was something structural that they made mistakes on. Bobby, you look very excited. We're talking about set pieces.
Well, I just love that you put Harry Maguire and Kiefer Moore in the same sentence. You know, the beautiful things that a World Cup does.
I think they're also pretty similar. I don't think it's that far out of the realm.
You stated an obvious thing and it didn't click in my brain, and I loved it once it did.
Another question is, I'm just scrolling through Twitter, just trying to like, and all the sort of soccer people I know are talking about this game in a completely different people than a way than the non-soccer people. How do you think this performance and this result played with a country that doesn't always grasp the nuance of this game?
Are you talking about Wales or the U.S.?
The U.S.
Love that, Doyle. Love that.
That's all I have.
When you're at your best, dude.
Yeah, it's really all I have to say.
Andrew, I think it's a good question, and
because we can get all bogged down in all this, but like, what is this moment for the U.S. men's national team? What is this moment for soccer? We're acolytes. You know what I mean? Like,
I would go back to I would go back to my opening statement about it, which was, I think if you watched on the bar, if you watched at home with your family, as someone doesn't watch soccer often, it was clear to you that the U.S. men's national team was the protagonist, was the better team, was controlling the play in a way that I don't think we've ever seen. And you guys know, among this group, I'm generally the one that is the maybe antagonist is the right word, or believes that we should have the bar much higher than we do. But for where I see the bar, I think to go out and boss the game, like unequivocally, truly, and I think the comparison here is if there's nine undeniably better teams in this tournament who are considered the favorites, outside of those nine, who else is going to boss a good team like the U.S. did for at least 45
minutes?
I'm going
to digress. Denmark? I'm going to digress. And so, are you including the Netherlands as one of the nine?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I am the betting markets are, basic history is. I mean, they're one of the nine. And is, I think what the U.S. did. So, Andrew, yeah, it's always hard when you don't win. But, man, I thought the way the game looked, the shape of the game was really encouraging, especially to Greg Berhalter's notion of changing the way the world sees American men's soccer.
I don't think that's what those people saw. I think that those people saw a team that went in possession. And look, you guys can argue about performance versus execution, that wasn't able to execute, that didn't provide exciting moments, that when the game was in the balance was second best, and who made a mistake to lose and generally did not provide the general American sports fan many moments of inspiration or excitement.
Well, now we have a really good focus group session.
I know Doyle doesn't. I know public. Doyle doesn't like that sort of like.
Matt, I can see the look in your eye. You gotta give your thought to that.
I'm just checking the Netherlands results historically over the past few years.
That's what you're locked into right now.
Yeah,
everything that's happened in the last 20 minutes, you're locked into that comment.
Yeah. This team that got eliminated in the round of 16 at last year's Euros, they didn't even qualify for 2016 Euros or 2018 World Cup. Their backup center forward who started today was Vincent Janssen. I mean, come on, Bobby.
You know what you're doing right now? You're Frankie at a debate DeJong stage, and they just somebody the just asked you about
overrated player in the world.
Oh,
it's fine. I look. I agree with Doyle on the Netherlands. I just that's I guess what I look at with the England game, and maybe the point I was making about that game fitting these players' personalities better is that I'm not sure that we really saw opportunities to like exhibit those personalities outside of the Tim Weah goal. Not sure there were moments that are going to capture, and look, you build into that over a tournament. I completely get that. But I think there are a lot of people that watch this game and were like, ah, like still, they don't see what you see, Bobby, because they don't, the nuance isn't there for them. They don't.
I would disagree personally. I think they don't see what you see. I think Christian Pulisic hitting across from the side of the box and there being a 50-50, people who don't know soccer think those are chances. So I disagree with you, but now we're doing a focus group. We've got about people. We don't know. So we don't need to dig too far into that.
Well, we do know those people, but yeah, yes, we haven't. They're not.
We just don't like talking about soccer with them. What's up, fair. Bobby?
I want to say I do want to go back to because I do think there's one more point about what we learned today that should be taken into the England game. And I thought the main weakness of the group, and maybe this goes to your point about energy, about excitement or bite, Andrew, is I thought the team was too reticent in attacking transitions. That there are too many times they picked the ball up and they played sideways or they didn't take the risk to go 1v1, acknowledging that at a high level game, that moment at midfield when it's 2v3 but you have space is a good moment. And we've heard over and over from Greg Berhalter that he wants this to be an attacking transition team. Like, I don't know where in the dialogue over the last 3 years that people think that he wants this to be a possession, build from the back, slow team. Like, his number one priority is transitions and verticality. And it's hard, right? Because you don't just want to run into pressure and give it away. But I thought on that meter of the aggressiveness and the bravery in attacking transitions, the team needs to dial it up because those will be even more important against England.
I also think that's the way the talent fits. And again, I think he's still leaning, trying to figure that out and lean in, but that's what the players in the US pool are at their best in. Okay, it was an interesting day, to say the least. There was highs, there was lows. I think we've seen that over the course of the show. Weeby, I know you have to go. We're going to dig in a little bit to tomorrow's games and get ready for everyone. We are here every single day at 5 p.m. Eastern time to talk about everything you saw at the World Cup and get you previewed for the next day. We will be here every single day. So we will do this again for Canada games, for other U.S. games, but also everything else going on to sort of be a spot for you to digest what you experienced, talk about what you're seeing. We've got a bunch of awards and categories. We're going to run through the whole tournament. So tweet at us who you think became a national icon every single day. We're calling it Free for Life. I don't know that Timothy Weah reached that status here today. Maybe Bukayo Saka did, unknown, but we'll see what else we can come up with over the course of this week. Maybe Cody Gakpo, who was Bobby's birthday present on this one.
I do have a nominee for an award though. David, is that producer Galena said she would like an award to be best celebration. And I liked Jack Grealish giving his ode to a promise that he had made to a young fan back in England. So I appreciated that he lived up to that and followed up on it.
Okay. I've gotten a lot of input from my household on Heartthrob of the day, which I didn't realize I was going to get and didn't realize that I really
Wait, can I guess?
Sure.
Was it Jahan Bashk?
No, it was Hossein Hosseini, the goalkeeper who came on for Iran. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was a lot of worry when at first he didn't come on because they saw him warming up. And then obviously it was a whole chaotic moment from there. But then fortunately or unfortunately for him, I don't know which one you'd say, Hossein Hosseini came on in goal for Iran and proceeded to concede 6 goals, whether his fault or not. It was 6-2 win for England in that game, obviously dominating, although Doyle, as you mentioned it, and this was tough because the clock was so far off. It took them 35 minutes to score a goal. Like, they do struggle to break down teams once again, but 35 minutes was actually really only, I think, 23 minutes of play. So maybe mentally I'm reading it wrong, but it did feel like there could be one of those games where England was going to struggle and sort of hit their head against the wall and try the same thing over and over again. But Bobby, I said it to you yesterday, I don't think Harry Kane needs to be a goal scorer for this team to be good. And I thought he showed it today. He drags a defender for Bellingham to score the first one. He has a layoff for the third and fourth goals in transition. He's got the through balls to Saka for his second goal and Rashford. Like, that's to me why he is potentially the best player at this tournament, because of the other things he does on top of being a goal scorer. And I thought he showed it here today once again, like what he means to this team.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And we had talked about one of the key parts of that England setup was going to be how they played for set pieces and how that factored into their starting lineup. And it seemed to me that Gareth Southgate indexed high for that. He brought Maguire in and you could see how dangerous he is. And if a big part of your plan is set pieces, then it works well.
And credit to Gareth Southgate. He's kind of been pressured for years now, Doyle, on being too safe, not unleashing the attacking players. He didn't go 5 in the back. He put Saka and Sterling and Mount on, and he went for it, and all of them played well, and a lot of their spacing was the reason that Iran couldn't handle the 4 attackers coming at them.
Yeah, and to be fair, Iran just, even that first 15 minutes before England got on the board, I guess the first 25 minutes before England got on the board, Iran did not look up for it. No. They looked completely overwhelmed, and once England started getting set pieces, it felt like this one was going to end 2 or 3-0, and then it ended up ending 6-2, you know? So it was a floodgates opening type of thing. But we've seen Gareth Southgate before against teams where England has a substantial talent advantage go with that 4-2-3-1. It really became a 4-3-3, right? Because midway through the second half, they released Bellingham and suddenly Rice was playing as a single pivot and it became a 4-3-3 instead of the 4-2-3-1. It's probably indicative of what he's going to do for the rest of the group stage. But with Gareth Southgate, when they come up against an Argentina or a Brazil or a Germany or maybe even a great team like the Netherlands, he'll probably go back to that 3-4-2-1, add the extra center back, even if Maguire isn't able to return, and turtle a little bit more. But this was, this was a pretty strong referendum on this strongly positive referendum on the quality that England have in their side, and specifically in that attack. And it's fun to watch great players play great soccer like that.
I thought England looked nice, man. I thought they looked good.
They did. They did.
One of my main notes is I think they hit the phases bingo. I think they scored in every phase. I'd be curious if anybody else has this, but their first goal was on effectively a controlled progression where it was just a classic up, back, through, break the line, bounce, play wide, and then get into the box. The second goal was a set piece. I think the third goal was out of a build out. The fourth goal was a set with the fourth goal was a transition, and the fifth was a deep, like it was actually really impressive. And I always feel good about a team when they can score in every phase. And I thought that's what we saw from England. Like, they're actually really good in every part of it. And it was fun to watch.
Now, Iran was playing under a coach who got there 2 months ago, although he has history. He played a formation they've not played in 3 years. He played a backup defensive mid at center back, as well as subbing or not starting two, some people would argue, of their best players. So Iran also had their moments to allow England in. Bobby,
there's also a weird moment based on what you said and the questionable decisions he made when they were down. It must have been 4-1, and the ball came to him out of bounds, and he threw it back to the person throwing it in, and the camera was still on him, and he was turned around pumping up the crowd. That I don't know. That stood out to me. I almost nominated that for Free for Life, but that was one of those, you know, bizarre moments.
But I will throw in there, I think for England, a lot of the stress in this tournament and pressure is psychological and external. And whether it's Iran or not, to have Saka score two goals and Kane have a good game and Sterling have a good game and to be confident is the perfect start for this team, where they deal with a lot of stuff outside of soccer. And a lot of the conversation coming into this is about legacy and culture and style and all these things. A 6-2 win and to set yourself up in the group and to have these players who Gareth Southgate said, I trust you, right? I trust you to change my shape because I believe that you're going to be difference makers is a huge win for him. And that's the exact start that they needed for this tournament. Obviously now England will face the US in the second game in Group B, and then Iran will play Wales, which we don't know where Iran is now. Like, are they mentally done? Is everyone going to check out? The tournament's over. And
I don't think so. I don't think so, man. Like that. This was gruesome today. What happened to them? But this Iranian team over the past dozen years, they have been through some ups and downs, both on the field and off the field. They have a lot of good players, a lot of good pros. They take seriously their position at or near the top of the Asian Federation. Like, they're right there generally, well, maybe a half step below Japan and South Korea, and they desperately want to get, you know, into that group. I would be surprised if they totally collapse after this. I think it'll look more like the U.S. in 2006 after got absolutely murked by the Czech Republic in the first game. They came back and drew Italy in the second game and, you know, probably should have drawn Ghana in that third game. I think there's just too much pride and too much quality in this group to be pushovers.
So I normally would agree with you. The off the field stuff right now, I question coming into this tournament how it affects them, right? Didn't sing the anthem, the lineup being weird, obviously the injury then to your goalkeeper. I wonder how much of that now is like, this isn't our tournament. We're not going to get out. But when you talk about Team Melli and the group that's in this World Cup for Iran, that has been their identity for the last 8 years. And so I wouldn't be surprised either, which creates an interesting matchup against Wales. Two teams that don't really want a ton of the ball. It's sort of going to start with who's going to do it because they have to, and who's going to be able to settle into their comfort zone.
Carlos Queiroz will never have more of the ball from the start. Like, he will never have more of the ball from the start of the game. So Wales is going to have to come out on the front foot.
Bobby, any big thought for you on Group B before we move on? Okay, Bobby, the Dutch 2-0 winners. I'll give you a quick one on that one, and then we'll preview the rest of tomorrow's game.
Should we just hand him the trophy now?
Probably Cody Gakpo. He was your young player to watch, I think, or you were excited about him. You keyed on him, whatever it was. He got the goal coming out of midfield, Frankie De Jong cross to finally break through and they end up beating Senegal 2-0, where one of our own, myself and Doyle's, Davy Klassen, shout out to the balds out there and the ones denying it and not denying it. Davy Klassen gets the goal late on in that game to make it 2-0. Bobby, take your victory lap.
I have never had a comment come out of my mouth that I felt was as safe and yet get as scrutinized as the fact that the Netherlands men's national soccer team is one of the best 9 teams in the world.
Yeah, I did not see that today, and I have not seen that from this team for a long time, since Robin van Persie was heading home from 18 yards.
This team is better than that team. This team is way better than that team.
Okay. I disagree. Maybe clearly now we should put some money on it. And
if you were a club, if you were a true Club and Country fan, you would have heard us go twice over the different brackets of contenders. And among the 9, they're in the fourth bracket. They're the ones where there'll be many articles written if they do win, but they're in those 9. And I thought today was fine. Right. I thought today was mostly what we would expect. I'm not sure. I thought it was an even game from a very good Senegal team that maybe missed Sadio Mane, but still demonstrated their quality.
Not maybe. Yeah. Not maybe. The whole thing with how Senegal set up, like they have that super, functional midfield, right? And that acts as a platform to give Mane room to freelance. Mane drops in, he becomes their 10. He inverts, he becomes essentially a second forward. He goes out wide and he becomes a true winger. Like, he does all of that. He keys with their press. Like, everything that they do is designed to be functional behind him and allow him to be Sadio Mane. And without him, they didn't have anyone who could take the moments that they were producing and turn them into high-level chances.
I also think the moments don't exist for Ismael Sarr and Dia without Mane on there where he's getting double and triple team. Like, Sarr can't beat two guys. He tries to stand defenders up and take them on. He could do that when it's 1v1 or when he gets it in rotation and then he has a chance. That's not his game. That wasn't Diakite's game in this one. Even then, I thought Senegal had the chances to go ahead 1-0.
They were the better team until they gave De Jong 40 yards of space to hit in a cross and Mendy strands himself in no man's land. And that's the type of thing that can happen against one of the 9 best teams in the world, I guess.
They'll get you.
I also think coming out of the three games we saw today, and obviously the tournament's still very young, we're going to get 4 games a day. We've still only had 4 games in total. There is clearly a level of fatigue as well, whether it's coming out of club play, whether it's the heat and the conditions, whatever it is. And so I think we're going to see the teams that have the ball be able to break teams down late on, because you see the teams chasing, struggling to physically stay in the game. And for Wales and the U.S., it was just everyone struggling to physically stay in the game. So tomorrow, we will be back with you live, 5 p.m. Eastern time on Twitter Spaces to review everything. You have your first full match day of this 2022 World Cup. It starts at 5 a.m. with Argentina versus Saudi Arabia. It's alternating between Group C and Group D. We then have Denmark versus Tunisia at 8 a.m., Mexico versus Poland at 11 a.m., and France-Australia ends the day at 2 p.m. Let's start with Argentina-Saudi Arabia. Bobby, I'm looking forward to texting you at 2 a.m. about this game very heavily, very detailed. But this, I think, might, to most people, be the most obvious game of the group stage. This is one of the 2 or 3 favorites, depending on how nice you want to be to other teams, against arguably the weakest team at the World Cup. Is there anything else we should know about this one?
Matthew, you are comfortable with Argentina being a favorite, right?
I think they're in the top bracket. Them and Brazil, I think, are the 2 best teams in the tournament.
They're in the second Club and Country today bracket, but that's okay. You're close enough.
Wait, who do you have in the first bracket?
Just Brazil.
In the first tier.
They have about as wide a margin in the odds in the projections right now as you'll see at a World Cup, really, coming in. Mm-hmm. And it's only getting bigger. And no, I mean, the main thing right around this game is, what does the shape look like around Messi? And primarily, is the entire thing built for him and through him? Or is he just an elite player on an elite team? And it feels like if it's A, there'll be a fun team that probably makes a deep run and could win. And if it's B, where he is just an elite player on an elite team with a functioning group around him, then they are one of the teams that you should probably even expect to make it to at least the Final Four.
Yeah. I think that feels right for Argentina. We talked about it right before the tournament started. 2 players forced off the roster because of injury. Thiago Almada, one of the players called in, Atlanta United player. And so right now it's, okay, can we just see who's healthy and plays for them because if they are close to what we expect, then they are heavy favorites to come potentially into the final, but at least to the semifinal. That second game, Denmark versus Tunisia. Doyle, Denmark is the first team outside of the nine, so they are worse than the Netherlands, but they go up against Tunisia in this one. Are you excited to see this team get on the field? Do you have a little Denmark energy, or are they kind of blah to you?
No, I have some energy. I think they generally play pretty attractive soccer. I thought they did last year at the Euros anyway. I think over the past 25 years, they've been, more often than not, they've been kind of fun to watch. Being fun to watch against Tunisia is not easy. They will take a page out of Iran's book, or hopefully for them, a page out of Wales's book in terms of playing against the ball. They do it in kind of a 4-3-3. They have a tempo setting number six, and then at least one destroyer in front of him. They'll play on the counterattack. It's the type of game that if Denmark are as good as they were last year, if they're as good as I think they are, and maybe you and Bobby think they are, then they'll find a way to win. They'll find a way to get all 3 points. They'll find a way to cope with the stuff that the U.S. weren't able to cope with in the second half of this game.
As Bobby thinks they are. I'm not on the Denmark train with Bobby. We had a pretty big debate last week about whether they can move from a reactionary to a proactive team. I don't believe they can. I have not seen the proof yet. And so this will be, as you said, this is the huge test. Like, do they play down to Tunisia's tempo and struggle to create and struggle through this game? Or are they able to be an elite team that's been able to create chances? Someone to watch out for in this one, by the way, Youssef Mascani, the Ferret. He plays his club soccer for the last 9 years. In Qatar, he is Tunisia's top attacking piece. He was injured 2 months before the 2018 World Cup and missed that one. So he's expected to be back and healthy. He scored the winner in the AFCON for them, which was a huge upset of Nigeria in the round of 16 for them to get into the quarterfinals. Let's continue on to our 11 a.m. game, maybe the biggest one of the day, Bobby, Mexico versus Poland. And this, like the U.S. and Wales, is one of those games that feels like it could decide the group right out of the gate, because these are, or at least decide who else gets out, because on the top, Argentina are heavy favorites.
Yes, and we talked about this multiple times, David, how when you come in, when you look at the framework of these groups, there's two different types. There's one where there is a distinct leader, a distinct favorite to make it out, and then there are two that are each about 50%. And then the second type of group is when there's two teams that are clearly at the top and likely to make it to the knockout rounds. But even with all of the angst around Mexico, with all of the turmoil, the common projection right now is they are still the favorite, slightly ahead of Poland, to make it out of this group. And I think it's really important to put that in perspective, that even though it feels like the sky is falling, that we should still expect them to get a result in this game, and certainly to get a result and make it to the next round.
It's going to be the keys, or the things a lot of people are watching out for. Obviously, it starts with the health of Raul Jimenez. And we saw him play 45 minutes against Sweden last week, which ended up being a loss in a friendly. Doyle, no Santiago Jimenez at this tournament, who a lot of people thought would be the starter at this spot. No one else who basically plays that much. It's Funes Mori, and then Henry Martin would be the other option. And then to me, what stands out in this game is Mexico's center backs, Hector Moreno and Cesar Montes, against Lewandowski, obviously, and Swiderski, who's been a big part of that as well. That to me is, I think, where the game is won and lost. What's your expectations right now for Mexico?
Yeah, I expect them to get out of the group. I think it'll be another four games, you know, another typical stay for them at the World Cup. I don't know that I expect them to win this game specifically because I like that Polish front two. Those guys are a problem against any center backs in the world. So, and that is not the strongest, like, this is not the strongest pairing that Mexico have ever had at the World Cup, rather. The question I have is, like, how is it going to play out in central midfield? We know Edson Alvarez is going to start at the back point of that 4-3-3. I'm not entirely sure who's going to start alongside him. And I know that Tata tends to favor veterans. I can't imagine he'll go with Ace and Guardado in this game.
I think he's going to do it.
It's like that would shake me. That's the one thing I would look at and say, oh man, they're not getting out of the group for the first time in a long, long time. But I think if they find a way to balance their experience with a little bit more youth and dynamism in central midfield, like, they're just going to be Mexico again. They're going to have a lot of the ball. They're going to use it well. They're going to create enough chances. They're going to get out of the group.
Now, them having possession, it fits Poland. They don't really want that much of the ball. They like to sit a little deeper and counter. They have Zielinski to connect, and Swiderski now to sort of connect to Lewandowski so he doesn't have to drop all the way in and get it. I think this is going to be a really good soccer game. I'm really excited for this one. And as we said, this sort of decides the group potentially. Although, as Bobby explained to us, taking points off the top team could be more important than who takes points off of each other in the end in the group dynamics. The final game of the day. France versus Australia. We got the word that Karim Benzema won't be a part of this World Cup. Didier Deschamps said Olivier Giroud will be the starter tomorrow for this game 100%. So he now returns to his role in which they won the 2018 World Cup. And Bobby, you are just so excited to watch Olivier Giroud post up defenders and lay it off.
I am definitely, if we're going to talk brackets, I'm definitely in the top bracket of people who love watching Olivier Giroud play soccer. That's for sure. And the guy, I mean, you've already won a World Cup with him as your center forward, and his performances have not dipped much since when he did in 2018. So if I'm France, I'm feeling fine. I might even think it might be one of these benefits in disguise type scenarios, right? I know it's a little bit crazy to say that when you lose the reigning World Player of the Year in Benzema, but I think what Giroud offers this team is so important, and I think that they are still fine and in one of the top three positions to win this.
I've already come out firmly against Bobby's point of view. Doyle, do you feel a need to weigh in here?
I mean, France has been awful this year. They have been unbearable to watch.
They have won one of their last six games, and they are currently behind both Denmark and Croatia in the Nations League. So, yes, they are struggling.
And they're going to play Griezmann as a 10, right?
Effectively most underneath likely, him and Mbappe will get probably
you think
free
it'll be
roles
more
in
of a 3-4-1-2 or more of a 3-4-2-1. Does it matter to you?
I think it'll set up in a 4-4-2, that mid highish pretty passive block defensively, and then when they get the ball, they'll just allow Mbappe to Griezmann to go wherever they want, and I don't think it requires much conversation or an analysis beyond that. They'll be solid defensively in the 4-4-2. They have two absolutely elite attackers who will be allowed to do what they want. See you later. Let's enjoy the run to the semis.
And dominate on set pieces. That's exactly how they won in 2018. There was nothing fancy about all of it. I haven't found them interesting to watch in a good long while, but they have so much talent.
Including when they won. Including when they won the thing.
Including when they won. When they used Blaise Matuidi as a left winger / D-mid. They played their D-mid at left winger, and it worked. And they
love it.
They won the World Cup.
And one of the big storylines, everyone loves talking about young players. I'm not sure that anybody has as important a job as a youngish player as Tchouameni does at center midfield, trying to replace Paul Pogba and N'Golo Kante, both injured. Remember, the two starters they had at center midfield, their two elite players from the 2018 run, are both out. And in comes a young player who is expected to kind of fill both of their shoes at the same time, or at least that's the way it's discussed. So it feels like I can't think of any other player that has as much to prove, but also as much on the line as he does. Is that hyperbole? Or does
no,
that
I don't
feel
think
right?
So, because as I told you in the Benzema Giroud debate, when you said, well, they already won a World Cup, they also did it with Pogba and Kante being the two most important players, or two of the three most important players on the team. They also did it with Kimpembe and Umtiti, guys who are not on this team as well. So a lot of the spine and experience from that group is gone. Someone else needs to step up. If Giroud plays the way he played in 2018 and Mbappe plays the way, they won't win the World Cup because they don't have the same talent around them. So if it's Tchouameni, if it's Kamavinga, another young player who could step in and be pretty important, if it's Rabiot, which would be one of the great comeback stories of I refuse to be called up as an alternate to the national team to I'm going to be a star and help us win for a third time. But that would be very French as well of like, I just wasn't in the mood that day. And everyone understands and feels it. It could be a pretty big swing for France. So this is their first chance. Bobby, I tried to give you the juice for Australia last week. You refused it. But last year they came out, they went toe to toe with France. They probably deserve to win. last World Cup in the group stage. So maybe they'll do so again tomorrow and we'll come on here and you'll do an Australian accent. It'll be a train wreck, but we will be back here at 5 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow. After all of the games, we will react and review what we saw and we will get you previewed for the following day. So just search MLS Today on Spotify or any of your podcast apps. That's how you find Club and Country Today. This is our World Cup show that is in that feed. And for everyone listening to Extra Time right now, that's where you can go and find our daily show, as well as Canada reaction shows, U.S. reaction shows, and much more over the course of this World Cup. It was only an 8 a.m. game today. I am ready for the 5 a.m. I've got it all set up. Doyle, I am ready to be exhausted by 9:15 every a.m. every single day for the next 3 weeks.
If it wasn't Messi, I would not be getting up for a 5 a.m. game against Saudi Arabia. There's
Argentina, Saudi Arabia as the first 5 a.m. game of a World Cup is a test. That is very, very true. It might be a second half nap game in that one to get prepped for the 8 a.m. game. And then, of course, we are very excited for Mexico-Poland at 11 a.m. We had Hugo Ramirez on last week from Mexico City to talk to us about it. Maybe we'll have some special guests on tomorrow as well to react to that game. So thank you to the two of you. Thank you to Andrew Weavy, who went off because one of his focus groups just arrived. So he has to get them in and get them prepped with all the questions they need to answer about how they viewed the soccer game. And thank you to Galena and Rich and everyone else who helps us out on the show. But most importantly, thank you to all of you out there for listening. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.